jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the Round 9 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. Go Bombers.
Yeah, it was disappointing losing 3 weeks in a row, and I'm glad at least one of our teams got a win. But, gee, it's not super at the moment with both Supercoach and my football team not flying very high. It's a big crash off being 5-0 and in the top 50 mark. Things have certainly turned around a little bit. But anyway, we've got a guest who's flying pretty high still, so hopefully he'll bring some positive energy to the show. Jack, or Live the Dream, welcome back, mate.
Thanks, boys. Thanks very much for having me.
I guess at this stage, considering your record, we probably shouldn't be surprised that you're doing so well this season. But why don't we start off, as we do each week, with a personal update. And Jack, you can let us know how you've gone so far this season.
Probably my lowest week, my first drop in the rankings for a little while. 2076, traded in Tui and Isaac Heaney. No, look, Tui, not ideal. 16 or something at the half, so that was really not looking good. But no, look, I'm quietly confident he can produce some reasonable numbers.
What was your ranking, mate?
Ranking is 293 overall. It's down 242 spots this week, which was took a bit of a hit. But I, sort of still around the mark, I think.
Still in the hunt, I would have thought. I'm hoping I'm still in the hunt, so you better be too, Jack. Mark, how'd you go?
I had another shocker, mate. 2097, which I guess wasn't the worst score. And I think Rockliffe saved my score a little bit with his captaincy effort, even though he got injured in the last few minutes. I think having Treloar, Beams and Green on the bench just exposed me to way too many rookie scores again. So yeah, it's been a pretty tough 3 weeks, and then we've got the Port versus Suns bye this week, and then one break and then into the bye. So it's going to be a brutal next sort of month or so as well.
I also had the same sort of trio of premiums out, Mark, and I actually sort of, before Newman came on as a late in, I actually had zero emergencies available. So I played a lot of rookies. My score's even worse than yours. I know you were talking up Rockliffe into Danger, and I was talking up Danger first into then maybe the five type. Five scored 99, Rocky 147. That's a big difference in the amount of points that we scored this week. I also brought in Heaney, which I'm happy with. I think our teams get more and more identical. I also brought in Heath Shaw. I'd like
and
to.
I brought in Tui. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah,
team's getting more alike.
I'd like to think that you continue to curse my players, like Tui. Hopefully, I'm not cursing Shaw, but the 77 wasn't ideal in his first up game for my team. So I scored 20-33, which is a pretty awful score. Nick Newman was on the bench.
Terrible.
Yeah, with 151. Tom Stewart on field. There's absolutely no reason why I should have done that. So that was a pure mistake, costing me 100 points. That's pretty frustrating and painful. But anyway, I'll live with that. Parsons, 38 on field. I'm hoping that he bloody moves off field this week. Fisher, get off field as well. Get Beams back on. Yeah, I'm hoping for better things this week. And you would have thought that Nick Newman stays in after his performance last week. So he can come in over Tom Stewart permanently too. And on to back into the top 1,000 hopefully next week. I need a big score after the last 3 weeks have been very poor. So
you've dropped from 50th to outside the 1,000 in like 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, I would have been in sort of the 1,100 mark if I had Newman on field. But yeah, it's been a big drop and my team's sort of plummeted as well, my Geelong Cats. Well, so yeah, it's been.
This is making me feel a little bit better.
Well, good to know, because it's it's pretty miserable at the moment. But like I said, it's 23 round season, and I've got a bit of time to turn things around. So I'm glad at least Jack's on, and he's all smiles for the moment, because I know the two of us, we've had a particularly rough few weeks. So anyway, let's move on. Enough sort of dwelling in the bad stuff, Mark. We got a comment from one of our listeners saying, why did he leave Newman on the bench as well? So I know a lot of people out there feeling a bit of pain. And then, you know, we got hit with Rockliffe again this week, Mark. So we'll delve into that. But before,
at least you still have Newman in your team, mate.
Yeah, you've passed up on some rookie value, which has been a bit unfortunate. Anyway, The main topics for this week is going to be dealing with the round 9 bye, which we've never really had before. This special situation where two teams go off to China and get an early bye. So we'll discuss how to deal with that. And then we're also looking at trade-in options. It appears like a few people are looking at upgrades this week. So we'll spend a bit of time trawling through some of the fallen premiums for some value. So let's start off with the round 9 bye. The first question here is from Lachlan McKinnon. What is happening this week with Suns and Port having a bye? Is it going to be best 18 or still the full 22 on the field? Yeah. So it's a rather unique situation that you have two teams missing, and sort of there's no compensation for the fact that if you happen to have those players, for example, Tommy Lynch, you get them with a bye, and unfortunately, sort of everybody else can trade them in post bye before you know round 11, and have them bye free during the traditional bye period. So you do pay a little bit of a penalty, unfortunately, for picking up Gold Coast or Port Adelaide player early. The good news is they will at least be buy free for the buys if you do decide to hold on to them. The first question in relation to the Port and Gold Coast players that we have here is from at Brett Worrell 28 on Twitter. Is this a good week to trade out Powell Pepper and Houston, or should we hold on to them for buy coverage? So I think with premiums, the equation's a little bit simpler because they either sort of keepers or not. But in terms of rookies, thoughts on Powell Pepper and Houston?
Houston missed the China game, but I had been playing all the way up until then. I guess Port don't have any injury list at all, and a young player maybe just missing that trip to China, so a good chance to be back after the bye, though no guarantees. I think for me, I know that some people are looking at keeping Powell Pepper. I've just been planning on ditching him this week the whole time. Like, he just sort of seems to have maxed out in price. It's a good time to get rid of him. I think that he's not probably not going to be needed on my field too much over the buys. So, yeah, what do you guys reckon?
It's an interesting dilemma, isn't it? Because there's obvious merit in keeping someone like Powell Pepper, because obviously he can cover round 11, 12, 13 when all your other players are out. But I sort of sit with you, I think, Mark, in that to me, he's served his purpose. And I think to have someone in the midfield like David Myers, who's on the bubble ready to go and you would expect will play, I think that seems to me like a pretty obvious cash out. There's merit both ways. If you've got more pressing issues to deal with, then so be it. But I'd say that he's probably run his race.
Yeah, overall, I do agree with you both in terms of dealing with these Port rookies and sort of moving them on, especially with Myers on the bubble this week. The next question here is from Braveheart or at CarltonJers87. This one's a little bit tougher, I think. Bin Eddie to avoid a donut. I know quite a few people are facing this week just because we're faced with Wits on the bye. So that means a lot of people are toggling Nankervis into their rucks, bringing Strandico or Cameron out into their forward line. Now, all of a sudden, if you're paired with a Balik who potentially might not come back this week, or a Black who got dropped last week. Anyway, if you have one other player that's not getting a game and you have Eddie, all of a sudden that's sort of a donut. Or maybe you have a Tom Lynch type and Eddie's forcing you a donut there and you really don't want to trade Lynch or Wits and you want to hold them through the bye. So this one's a little bit tricky in the sense that he's not worth the same amount of cash that Powell Pepper and Houston are. Would you kind of concede the fact that you'd be basically half a step behind the upgrade-downgrade cycle by trading Eddie out? Or would you just cop the donut to avoid that?
I'd love to hear what Jack reckons, because depending on selections with Balik and Parsons, I could be in the situation myself, but with Parsons in Eddie's shoes, yeah, like, do you trade this week to avoid a donut? I guess my initial thoughts are that maybe you do, because you're going to need that player during the full-on buys anyway. So if you can get some live players onto your bench, you're going to need it at some point.
I'm with you, Mark. I think I've got Parsons, Black and Balik, and the way the Cats are going at the moment, I have no real confidence in either of them playing or scoring well this week. So in my mind, I think it's too early to be wearing a donut. I mean, my most likely move is actually to upgrade Jared Witts, if possible.
I think I'd agree with that. If it's a decision between trading out a rookie that hasn't gone up in price or trading out Jared Witts, who you're going to look to trade out eventually, I think a lot of people, especially the closer we're getting to the buys, are considering keeping Witts just to help out with donuts during that period. But there's no reason why you need to keep Witts either. So if it's to avoid a donut, I mean, you can trade Witts to a forward, which sort of opens up your flexibility. You're not committed to trading him to a ruckman if you've got Mankiewicz in the forward line. I think that's a pretty sound move. So I don't know. It's hard to say because I traded Eddie out to avoid a donut, but I feel like I was dealing with players like Green and Mankiewicz that I really wanted to keep, whereas Witts, like, you're kind of on the fence with keeping him anyway.
The Witts one is a really interesting one. Like, is he a keeper for the year? I think if you're keeping him for the buys and you're planning on keeping him in round 13, then that's either your last upgrade or you don't upgrade him at all. So I'm not sure that he's a keeper in the ruck. I'm not sure that he's going to average sort of 100. So I guess the next question is, who do you target and how does that work in with your buy structure? Because I know that there's some cheaper ruckmen at the moment, but pretty hard to have confidence in anyone. I mean, Seth Martin's probably the most reliable, consistent high scorer, but and Jacob seems like he's in pretty good form, but I don't know exactly who I'd even trade Witts to. But And I guess the other side of that coin is that if you don't trade Eddie this week, you're still carrying that non-playing player.
And we did get a question from Charles Hurt So Good on Facebook about the fact that this is a year where we might not possibly get to a full premium side, and therefore Witts and Sandilands might be hold tight. But even if they're not, they'd probably be one of the last to be upgraded. So therefore, do they look like good keeps throughout this buy period? And I think Sandilands being around 13 buy player also looks sort of extra tempting to hold on for that distance. In addition to the fact that there's not sort of standout ruck options available right now, Mark, as you referenced previously, I think that's a large reason why a lot of people are thinking about holding both. Jack, what are your thoughts about the ruck situation? Do you have Sandy Witts?
Yeah, I've put Sandy Witts like you guys, and definitely agree with both of you what you said, that there's no one ruckman, probably other than Stephen Martin, who you can be really confident in trading in. I mean, yes, if Witts is out and it's going to be a donut, then in my mind, he just goes. That's not an issue. But as to who he goes to, I think it's pretty important to look at the rest of your team to see which ruckman is going to suit the buy structure the best. And yeah, I think Sandilands is an obvious hold until round 13 and then reassess. But I'd be reluctant to bring in, say, a Stephen Martin, because reality is he's missing one out of the next three games anyway. So why not wait for him until after his bye? So I'll be looking personally at Goldstein, probably is the most appealing option to me, given his round 12 bye, and that suits my structure a little bit better. Or, as you said, if you've got the dual position option, you trade him to whichever forward premium is going to suit your bye structure the best, because I think that has to be at the forefront of your planning now, is trying to maximize your scoring over those three rounds.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough one with Martin's buy. I'd be tempted, if I was trading in the rucks, to just cop the bullet and take the round 11 donut with Martin if I wanted to trade in a ruckman, just because I wouldn't be as confident in a Goldstein Grundy. If I were thinking like you were, Jack, and wanting to hold off on Martin until after the buys, then I'd be much, much more tempted to just bring a forward in instead. Mark, where are you sitting on all this?
God, I am honestly really, really struggling for ideas. In my situation, if Balick and Parsons are out, then I will have two donuts. So, yeah, I might just look for the delete team button, maybe. Probably my gut instinct says to follow Jack. I just copied his trades last week. I might do it again this week and do Power Pepper to Myers and Witts to Goldstein, potentially. Mm.
Can we not release this section of the podcast, please? I mean, Goldstein's at 7%. Let's keep him at 7.
We'll move on to off the buys now. Hopefully that gives you enough to sort of think about. And I think Jack's point is really key at this point in the season. The setup work that you do now for the three bye weeks is absolutely key. I think most people have a smattering of plays in round 11, 12, and 13. And these next few rounds are really about filling in the dots and making sure you don't stack too hard on a particular bye round.
And the interesting thing, having two teams already had the bye, is that in round 12, there's only four teams with the bye. Mm. So you're unlikely to have too many players from that round in your team. Mm. So they're probably the ones that you want to be targeting.
So we'll move off the buys now and to sort of key injury of the week. This question here is from at Steven Soden on Twitter. The 591K question for the week, if Rockliffe is out for 2 to 3 weeks, do you hold or trade?
Think- Fuck!
I definitely agree with that. I think he was one of the few exceptionally successful picks that we both started with, Mark, and it sucks that he's being ripped out underneath us for the next couple of weeks. I think it is worth noting that he's around 11 by player. So if he misses two, he's basically missing three, which if you give time between games, it's basically 4 weeks to recover from this injury before his next game. I'm tempted to say, considering he's already going to miss one of those with a bye, it kind of makes sense to just keep him. I'm very tempted to keep him. He's also sort of the premium averaging midfielder at the moment, so it feels exceptionally difficult to get rid of him. There's kind of no question in my mind that I'm keeping.
In your position, I would be a definite hold. I would love to be a Rockliffe owner. I am not a Rockliffe owner. In my mind, he's got the bye in 3 weeks' time, so that's a free week off.
Yeah.
It's a 2 week injury. You're not trading Tom Rockliffe for a 2 week injury. Like, not even a question for me. He's without doubt someone that you want to finish your team with. And I mean, it's just very unlucky timing.
I think it's fairly emphatic from the two of us, I don't think we need a third on this one. We'll move on to the trade in targets now. We're going to start by looking at rookies, and the first guy that we're going to talk about is Myers, and the questions come from Brad or BXC100 on Twitter. Is he a must-have? 46 and 58 is sort of the only concern, but we've seen his ability to score an average in the 70s, 80s before, so scoring potential shouldn't be a massive issue. He seems like a fairly obvious one, doesn't he, Jack?
Yeah, in my mind, he's without doubt the best option this week. I would have liked to see a little more from him in the lead-up, but I think certainly the job security seems to be there and the role is fairly well-defined. Not to mention, he's on the bubble, as is just about no one else at the moment. Mm. And to boot, round 13 bye. Thanks very much. You play your four games and then you've done your job anyway.
I expect him to definitely improve. Did you see on the weekend against the Cats, he was marking the ball like 70 out and then just like lining up for a drop punt kick at goal. Yeah. He didn't make the distance, but he's pretty confident in how far he can kick the ball.
That is some serious, serious swag, isn't it? Just pulling the socks up from 70.
Yeah. Oh, I loved it. The first time he went for it, the umpire thought it was that outrageous that they basically played him on.
Yeah, they played him on. The umpire told him, mate, you have not got this in yet. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
We have two more rookies that are on the bubble that did play on the weekend. One in the forward line, Sam Durden. We've heard his name pop up in preseason as a potentially good selection. I think he was a former number 16 selection, so definitely highly rated as a youngster. And then we've got Brad Shear playing from Gold Coast in the midfield, 117,000. So I guess you probably wouldn't bring him in this week, especially with Myers also on the bubble, but sort of those are the two other blokes on the bubble.
I think Durden just signed a 2-year contract extension last week. And so North are obviously going to get some game time into him. His scoring looks really average, though. He's playing more as a key defender, and I think what he's had a couple of 40s. So might struggle to earn too much money and available as a forward. So, yeah, pretty tricky to bring him in. But I guess he will play. And like you said, with Shear, we don't even know whether he's going to be playing his third game in a row. So tricky to bring him in this week.
Agree with both of those.
What would you guys reckon about bringing in James Stewart instead of Durden if you were looking at a forward? Like, this was the other potential I was considering for solving the Parsons Balick sort of forward issue that I'm having. I could bring in Stewart after just one game. I know he had a ripper on the weekend. Just want to know your guys' thoughts.
What's he worth out of interest?
170,000 and scored 91.
To be honest, I don't mind him as an option at all, and certainly at that price, you're not really paying much of a premium, and he sort of is already going to make that back by scoring 90 on his first game anyways. It probably comes down to, as you said, who in the forward line have you got that needs to be traded out? I mean, again, I can only speak from my team, but I almost can't look at any forward rookies at the moment because I'm sitting on Black, Balick, Parsons, and
yeah,
that makes it pretty difficult because all of them are only worth the same price or 30 or 40k more. But no, I certainly have my eye on Stewart as a potential next week.
I think that's a good call out that you make there, Jack, because I've got Parsons and Black too, and I've got Hoskin Elliott on field as my last sort of expensive rookie. If I trade down Hoskin Elliott, I'm basically hoping Black comes into the team, Parsons somehow spikes in price, and I can trade him out at a decent value. Like, I'd be stuck with three rookies that aren't sort of ripe or ready to be moved on yet, and that might hamper my ability to sort of cash out to a full premium team. So as you get closer to a full premium team and you're getting to more downgraded rookies on field, that's definitely something that you need to be looking forward to in terms of what's your next trade in that position. Are you stifling yourself by having sort of too many premature rookies on one line sort of in a short period? So Stewart, you know, he could be an absolutely good pick, but yeah, he doesn't quite fit my structure at the moment either.
At 170, it really is hard to go early. I wish that I was looking for a back rookie this week, because just putting it out there that Schoenberg's had, I think, 34 touches in the last 2 weeks in the VFL, shown awesome disposal, much better than a lot of his other Collingwood mates. So I would be expecting him back at some stage now, playing, I think it's about 6 games.
Yeah, he'd have to be close.
So I think that's pretty much it for the rookies at the moment. It's pretty thin, but hopefully you've got Myers available, because you didn't go early on him, and you can do a one down, one up this week, and we'll sort of breach the tough rookie options next week when we have to deal with this all over again. Hopefully Brad Shear makes it easier for us by just making it in next week, eh? Alright, on to premium trade-in options now. So we're moving on to basically trawl the value heap. The first question here is from @AlexW on Twitter. Does Alex Rance fit a good trade-in profile for Andy Otten? He's got the round 12 bye. So I just thought that it'd be good to field this question, because I don't think he's had probably quite the attention that he normally gets after sort of quite poor scoring in the first 5 rounds. But in the last three, he's gone 106, 92, 106. And that round 12 bye really sort of can't be underrated. He's currently priced at 483,000.
I think 2 years ago, I brought him in around the buys and he completely dominated for me and really made my season. And then I think, was it last year that you brought him in, Marcus, and he did the same thing? So we both had good success with him. And yeah, from the form he showed in the first 3 quarters on the weekend, he kept the Tigers barely in the game. And he's averaged 95 for the last 2 years. So with that bye and his durability, seems like a pretty good pick.
I would agree exactly with what you said, Mark. Here we are both choosing Zach Tui last week instead. Face palm.
It's a tough one. This season, I really would like to avoid picking key position backmen. I think there are enough decent scoring options that I don't need to take the punt on a key position backman. And if I were to, I would kind of be hoping I'd be paying less than 480 for Rance. So from that point of view, I'm not as tempted. But on the flip side, he's currently averaging 90. He's normally good for a 95 average. Just a regression to that mean would mean that he'd have to average 100 for the remainder of the season to hit that. And I think he's more than capable of doing that. So I think the writing on the wall is pretty good. But having said that, this season, more than most, I'd be fairly tempted to take a punt on a running defender instead. I think the points have been shifting toward running defenders in the last couple of years, and there's enough that I don't feel like I need to take a risk on a tall.
And that's really what convinced me to go Tui last week in the end, because there was a while that I was leaning towards Rance, but then just looking at Tui's numbers, like, he just had so many possessions that it looked like at some point he was going to break through for a really huge score.
Yeah. Off this same disposal profile at Carlton, Tui would have been averaging in the hundreds already. So his disposal efficiency has definitely been down. He's been using his hands a lot, but Geelong have lost 3 in a row and he's averaging 90 still. So definitely time to turn it around. So I might take a different tact and say I'd probably pass on Rance at this stage still. Next question is from Cam Locke on Twitter. He's waiting for Pendles to bottom out. Is he worth the wait, or is it just not his year? And I think everybody was expecting that Pendlebury would bottom out last week, because he had a 67 in round 5, but then he scored 91 last week and 76 this week, and his break even still 161. 556, and looking like he'll still drop this week. Would you still see him as a a sure thing for a top eight midfielder, or has your perspective potentially changed on Pendlebury?
I'm a bit unsure after the weekend. I think he's posted under 90 like once in 100 odd games, and now he's done it twice in the last four. So it'd be interesting to know what's going on there. Like the first time he did it, he responded with a 149, but whether it's his wife being pregnant, he's not getting any sleep, or she's just pissing him off so much at home, he can't focus on footy. It happens. You'll find out one day.
Okay.
I'm really unsure. Like, he's had four scores over 100 this year and four scores under 100 this year. Given his pedigree, I think you got to back him in to bounce back. What do you reckon, Jack?
It is a massive element of randomness, the childbearing father now. You have to back him, don't you? I mean, he's still in the age profile where he should be at the top of his game. And I would be still scared any team that I played. If I didn't own Pendlebury and I was coming up against the team with Pendlebury, I would still be nervous.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, Selwood's had a down year before. Like, that can happen to even the Guns. I guess we just expect that Pendlebury's on a different level and that even his down years would be sort of the over 110. But, yeah, and maybe the Collingwood midfield, like, because they've got the depth and Adams, like, literally seems to be their number one midfielder at the moment. I could sustain, but you'd back him in. Marcus, what do you reckon?
Yeah, it sounds like none of us are that confident, but it's hard to sort of bet against history. I guess I'm in a different scenario because I don't have Pendlebury and I already have three round 13 by premiums in the midfield. So I'm tempted, based off this record, to hold off on Pendlebury until the buys and bring him in afterwards. I understand that there's definitely room for his price to go back up after having dropped 90k from his starting price tag, but I think I'll run that risk. I want a little bit more confidence that he can turn the form around. He did sort of enter the season with a little bit of a cloud, with missing the, you know, the last JLT and having a sore Achilles. And I guess I'm at the point where I don't necessarily have to take the risk. I definitely want to wait at least one more week if his break even's 161, and then if you want, you can bring him in next week's kind of where I'm at with him. That's enough commentary on Pendlebury. I'm sure he'll just bash out on 161 and I'll feel like an idiot for not bringing him in exactly this week. Next question is from Paul Maltman. Thoughts about Dusty at 510k. So Faz, who joined us for the show last week, did trade in Dusty and was okay with the 105. But since the first three rounds where his lowest score is 118, he's only since scored 100 once in the following five rounds. I'm a little bit concerned about sort of his breakout potential now in terms of moving up into that 120 bracket. Thoughts on Martin?
I thought he was potentially going to do danger numbers at the start of the year, and then he picked up the groin injury and he just hasn't really fired a shot since. His last sort of month has been okay without posting a really good score, and if he hadn't played such a dominant last quarter on the weekend, he would have struggled even further. So yeah, I think it has to be a no on Dusty, like whether that groin injury is affecting him more than we think or his numbers have just dropped off the cliff really.
Does round 12 sort of factor in here at all, Jack?
Yeah, for these gun midfielders, I think, yes, the buy planning has to come in a little bit, but you want to be confident of the player that you're bringing in regardless. I think you've got to actually look at the fact that, yeah, all of these players are going to be missing one out of the next, say, 15 games or however many rounds are left. So realistically, you can make that up pretty quickly if you've got a guy averaging 115 compared to 108 like he is at the moment. So yeah, geez, I almost paid 630k for him after round three. And that was a serious, serious bullet dodge. And the only reason I didn't is because I considered the fact that I was so sure. He'd been so dominant in the first three rounds that Mitch Robinson had to tag him, and he did tag him, and he picked up this groin injury. But also, interestingly, the Tigers, they probably lose their fourth on the trot this week to GWS. So maybe it's being part of a winning team and kicking goals and that sort of stuff. Maybe you have to wait until the Richmond draw opens up a little bit to even consider him. So, no, I think he's a great buy at 500k, but I'm not sure that he takes precedence over some of these other options at around that price.
And the next bloke, I think, is a fair comparison to him. So this question's posed by Steve or Awesomeness SCC on Twitter. Is history repeating with JPK? Massive value is he if he's able to turn the corner. We've seen JPK do this in the past. He has slow starts, and then he bangs out a massive second half to the season. He's averaged 115 very consistently, despite never really seeming like he's averaging those numbers. He always surprises me with what he actually pushes out by the end of the season. So it definitely presents a huge amount of value at 519,000. Having said that, his average at the moment is under 105, so it is quite low, but I would have a bit more confidence picking JPK over Dusty at this stage.
Yeah, I think it really depends on your perception of Sydney. Like, they've won against Brisbane and North in the last 2 weeks, but they could easily be two of the bottom three or four teams. So is that a real guide for form, or is that just beating up on the bottom team? So I think you'd really want Sydney to really make the finals from here, basically, despite their really, really slow start. And that would definitely come into my assessment. So yeah, I think it's close, but I don't think he's going to completely burn you if you don't take him.
Yeah, I'd be inclined in the same boat. I think it's almost like clockwork, isn't it? And like you said, you do look and you think, geez, is this the like fifth straight year this guy's averaged over 110 and no one seems to pick him or certainly start with him? But yeah, I see more value in having Sydney players like Heaney and these sort of young up and comers.
And if you're looking for a mid and you've only got 520 to spend, I would not be upset about bringing him in at all.
No, absolutely not. What a great, great bargain for a guy who can very comfortably average 115 over a long stretch.
We'll move on to the last question for the week. Now, this one's from Cameron McKenzie. Is Kobe Stevens a decent pod on the bubble this week? Did he miss last week?
And yeah. Why did he miss?
He got suspended injured? For literally the softest tackle on Nathan Wilson of all time. Nathan Wilson plays the game out and Kobe Stevens gets a week. This is absolutely outrageous.
So he will be back at least though this week. Would you, either of you blokes, consider him? He's had 107 and 97 as his first two scores. He's a mid forward player priced at 468k.
I think he had an interrupted preseason, which is why he didn't start in the first five rounds, some sort of illness maybe. It has an average premium numbers before, round 11 by, not like a massive, massive discount, so no for me.
I don't mind him as a pick, to be honest. How I see Kobe Stevens, especially at the Saints now, he's obviously a depth midfielder. Let's not kid ourselves here. He's a bit of a journeyman, but this is a depth midfielder. He doesn't get you 15 or 18 touches a game. He's a depth midfielder who gets you close to 25 in a good game and a couple of tackles. I think he's actually a really strong player, but these round 11 forwards, my God, they're like doing my head in. This is another guy I would consider picking, but I already have too many. So, no, I think there's safer options. As a POD, I think you could do a lot worse.
Yeah, I think the round 11 buy is definitely quite relevant. If you passed on Heaney last week because of round 11 buy pressure, it's hard to see you going to Kobe Steve this week, and if you didn't have Heaney last week, there was a good chance you picked him up. So yeah, I don't see Stevens making it into a huge amount of teams, but like you said, you can certainly go worse than 467 for a potential premium there. All right, we like to wrap up each week with a captain's corner. Last week, Mark, you had some pretty good results, so why don't you let us know what you're doing and I'll just listen to that, because fuck, I've screwed up three captaincies in a row now.
Oh, really? Okay. I don't think you're really going to like my advice. I have Danger as the vice captain, and then I don't have any other good players in my team. So I think Witsy on the bye is going to have to play pretty well and be the captain. I got no one.
Yeah, I'm sort of a bit the same, Mark. I've got a whole heap of guys who are sitting at 108 in my midfield. We always have to reassess the number that we take at the moment, because no one seems like they're consistently hitting a 120 other than Bontempelli, and even he let a lot of guys down over the weekend. With Rockcliffe out, I reckon 110 is a banker for your captain scores. I don't mind the idea of Rory Laird versus Brisbane as vice-captain. I think he must just about be leading the AFL for disposals. He's incredible. He had 37 in a loss to Melbourne and 124. I think it has to be Dangerfield, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, I agree with that. It's hard to go past Dangerfield first, especially because he plays on the Friday night. I agree that Rockliffe out makes the captaincy choice a bit more difficult. I like what you're saying about the fact that 8 weeks in, the bankable score looks a lot more different than potentially 4 weeks in, where we're seeing massive amount of players still keeping up a 130 type average. That seems to be quite a few poor scores lumped in with the premium scores at the moment. So I might go for a safer captaincy option and pick up a Tom Mitchell. He's playing Collingwood and they let midfield points go a little bit. So I don't mind Mitchell as a backup option. But otherwise, Laird would probably be fairly close to my sort of second option there.
Just really scraping the barrel, bottom of the barrel here, guys. And I think one of the real disappointments for the season scoring-wise has been Nathan Fyfe. He got off to a pretty decent start, but he's not the sort of player that he was a year ago. He's way off that player. He's not able to just win every contest and always find his way to get a possession out and be always so effective and take contested marks inside the forward 50. He's not that Nathan Fyfe yet.
I think that's enough for this week's show. Hopefully that gives you enough to tackle round 9 and gives you a bit to think about premiums wise. Don't forget patreon.com/supercoachcoach to support us. And we're actually releasing a little bit of a short extra this week. So if you're a Patreon subscriber, head over to patreon.com/supercoachcoach. Just log in and you should be able to see a little bit of an extra download for yourselves to enjoy and just to say thanks, because we haven't done an extra since the start of the season. So anything to add, Mark, before we wrap up the show?
Did we talk about the Bombers beating the Cats? Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Mate, if you hadn't picked up, I need a bit more of a pick-me-up this week, not to have the fact that my team sucks and my Supercoach team sucks rubbed in. Jack, anything to add from your point of view to our listeners before we head into the buys?
Make sure your planning is done. This is moving day. Over the next couple of rounds, you ought to make sure that you are well planned, or as best planned as you can be, so that you can get some ground on the masses. That'll be the key. And hopefully Adam Treloar just comes back and absolutely rips the AFL to pieces.
I think having a week off when you have a sore groin definitely helps. We've seen that in the past. So I'll keep my fingers crossed for that as well. Jack, we're certainly hoping you move up into the top 20 over the course of the bye period. You're placed well to definitely contend for the prize. So we'll be keeping our eyes out for you, and hopefully we get you on at least one more time before the end of the season and hear how you've progressed since and hopefully had a good bye season.
Beautiful. Thanks very much, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. And thanks very much for tuning in again this week, and we'll see you all next week. Bye.
Don't want to make you crazy. Don't want to make you crazy. Let's get crazy.